This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakland Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited for today's guest. I loved this conversation. This is Justin Bonkus is on the program. He's president and CEO of Caliber Projects, doing a ton in the Fraser Valley. Really excited to have Justin on the program. This is a conversation that's a little different than a lot of conversations we have on this show.
You know, I'm excited about this conversation for two reasons. One, Brendan Lacerda last week, Brendan Augmentson the week before, great conversations. I kind of need a break from the Trump tariffs, to be honest. And we're getting back to the nuts and bolts. This is a story about a guy who started framing up on a roof, decided to open his own shop, and we hear the whole story. And he does it in a unique way, and we hear all about it today. It's a great, great conversation with Justin.
Yeah, I think this is going to resonate for a lot of our listeners because really Justin, in a lot of ways, he's a guy who's passionate about real estate. He's a guy who's passionate about business and about delivering on his word. And
he's doing it differently, right? There's some things he does very differently than almost anyone else in the business, as far as I can understand. So
totally. Tons of takeaways. So
stay tuned for that for sure.
Yeah.
And he should almost be, honestly, this is a final thing about Justin. He should be a guy that, you know, he could give seminars. He's a very compelling guy. Anyway, stay tuned for that.
100%. And before we get to that, Matt, yeah, I guess we're not going to talk tariffs, but I do feel like it's a bit of a groundhog day. It's like, I don't know. How would you frame that?
Is this
four more weeks of panic?
Justin Trudeau
saw his shadow. I don't.
Well, here's the thing: 4 more weeks. It might be 4 more years. And in fact, I think it is. I think it is. When do we get back to normal? We're not getting back to normal. It's a new normal. I feel like we've said that a bunch over the last couple of years, and I think there's a new normal as well.
What a time
geopolitically!
To be alive.
Oh God, it's an amazing time. Amazing time to be alive. But what else do we have before we get to our talk with Justin?
Yes, we have, of course, this real estate podcast is sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, as is this new trivia section that it remains nameless for yet another week, but we will come up with a clever pun at some point.
We don't have a name, but I do have a real estate question for you. Okay, ready for this week's?
Well, yeah, ask the question. Go ahead.
Before settling on Vancouver, what was the city almost named? And why?
Ooh.
Have I got your attention? So let me just repeat that for everyone listening at home. Before settling on Vancouver, obviously the name of the city, what was the city almost named and why?
Interesting.
And now that I have your attention, Adam, before you answer, let's talk about one of Scalina Real Estate's listings this week, because we have a couple of new listings and there's some stunning listings going up on VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Yeah, so we have an amazing listing coming up. Super excited about this one. We are all the way on Millionaire's Row.
Millionaire's Row?
Yes, so it is
Point Grey Road, you say?
Point Grey Road. We have a fantastic new listing coming, 1701 Blenheim Street. It's at the corner of Blenheim and Point Grey Road. This is a 2,040 square foot half duplex attached garage with a 430 square foot patio. And that's not really doing it justice because it actually has a yard and the yard is beautifully manicured. It's perfectly landscaped and it's just the most beautiful. It's the type of home, you know, the seller said to me, I've never lived a place before where I've had so many people stop and ask me about this property, because people, you know, cycling and walking in the neighborhood, it is an absolute showstopper, and it's going to be able to you're able to view it over at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. Also, water views from the living room.
Speaking of views, yeah. So water views, we're west of McDonald's, right on the corner of Blenheim and Point Grey Road. I can attest this is a stunning home from the exterior and interior. It's worth a look. VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And while you're there, Adam, click sell with us. And when you do, that will give you access to the sold plan. What's the sold plan about?
Yeah, sold plan. It's sold stands in our case for start on launch date. So you basically, you pick the day that you want to start launch your listing when you're thinking of selling. And this gives you a step-by-step guide to basically get your property ready for market. It's free. It's an instant download available at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click sell with us and get your own free copy. And Matt, I guess I have to guess here because I'm having a tough time. I'm thinking about notable Vancouverites founders. There was John Gassy Jack Dayton.
Yeah, that's true.
Made famous for the Dayton Cup, maybe. Was he the Dayton Cup? I have no idea. I have no idea if there's a connection there. You don't know either.
I don't know either. Yeah, I'm going to leave that one to you. The Dayton Cup, bottom. I was thinking Gastown.
Well, okay. So I'm going to say Vancouver narrowly missed being called Gassy Jack.
Okay. Well, actually, it's interesting. In the running was Gastown for the entire city. Gassy Jack Dayton. So,
holy.
I know. I feel like the trajectory of Vancouver would be very different if it was called Gastown.
Oh, it would
and
be
maybe
like,
not for the
it would
better.
Be like Detroit Motor League. It would be there'd be something way cooler about this city. I feel like we'd all be I don't know. What would you dressed in what do you call that? Where you wear those silly small glasses and steampunk. That's what you call it.
You could have left me for 4 hours and I wouldn't have guessed steampunk.
Nobody. Is that part of the trivia?
Do you want the answer?
Yeah. Yeah. What is the answer?
Okay. I don't think this guy was in marketing. This was actually suggested by the Canadian Pacific Railway official who was thinking this would appeal to investors and immigrants from England. It was going to be called Liverpool of the Pacific.
Ooh. I think they landed on the right name.
Here's the other thing. Did you know that George Vancouver actually never stepped foot in Vancouver?
Really?
So that's the other part of the trivia.
And I just want to verify Dayton Cup is named after John Gassy Jack Dayton. So
is that right?
Another little piece of trivia there. So yeah, we're helping people win trivia night at pubs, local pubs around us. What else do we got, Matt? Let's cut to this conversation. I love this one. This is our conversation with Justin Bonkis, president and CEO of Caliber Projects.
This was a fantastic one. Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
Adam, we want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Soane House, one of Marcon's latest communities that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced, Nordic-inspired design for architecture that endures.
Soane House offers 165 junior 1 to 3 bedroom homes in West Coquitlam, integrating nature into the built environment.
Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's marcon.ca/soenhaus. Or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
We also want to highlight 102 and Park. With billions already invested in Surrey City's central development over the last 15 years, the time is now to invest in its future, Surrey 3.0.
Introducing 102 and Park. A simple, straightforward skyscraper featuring 376 homes. Quite simply, this is a once-in-a-decade opportunity coming soon to Surrey's central downtown plaza. This is a time and the place to invest. register at marcon.ca/102andpark. That's marcon.ca/102andpark.
Marcon, building for life. Okay, so we're here with Justin Bonkis. He is the president and CEO of Caliber Projects. How you doing, Justin?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today, Justin. Maybe for our listeners who are not familiar with you, can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, you bet. So grew up in the Fraser Valley operating a company called Caliber Projects. So Caliber is a multifamily construction company. We're also doing some development as well. So we're mostly primarily operating here out of the Fraser Valley, kind of from, let's say, Abbotsford all the way up to Surrey, now getting into Tri-Cities a little bit. So our head office here is 64th and 200th, and like to stay sort of within an hour of our office. It gives us a bit of a better handle on the projects that we're doing. And yeah, so for me, myself, growing up in the Fraser Valley, never thought I'd be running a large construction company. Always kind of wanted to be a framing contractor, liked working with my hands, liked construction, like kicking the dirt, smelling the diesel fumes, enjoyed that side of it. But, you know, went and did my degree at BCIT, and I was framing on a roof, one December day, and it was -2 and it's raining. And most places when it's that kind of weather, it's snowing and you end up getting to go home. But, in the Fraser Valley here, it's raining. I'm freezing my ass off on top of this roof. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, I need to go get an office job. So, got into construction project management. At the time, this was 2005, 2006, when if you guys thought it was busy 2 years ago, it was, even busier back then. You couldn't find anybody to do anything. And somebody took a flyer on a 22-year-old kid, hired him as a project manager, and got into project management from there. I realized I was okay at it, had fun doing it, and grew in my role. And then 2008 happened. I was working for a developer that maybe wasn't as financially well-backed as I would have thought or would have liked, and ended up losing my job. And at that time, it was actually pretty tough to find one. So I ended up creating my own job. And that's when I started Caliber, and started off building, single family homes, doing renovations, built my own home, kind of worked through the process that way, but always really wanted to get back into the bigger projects. And ended up partnering with one of my brothers on a townhouse project in Willoughby, 39 row homes. So he was doing the development side. I was doing the construction side, and ended up doing 7 projects together over the years. And at a certain point, it made sense for us to go our separate ways and to branch off. And my brother since then has, started his own, he's doing his own construction and his own developments. And we're doing our own developments as well as the construction. And we're also doing construction for a lot of other developers out here as well. And it's been really rewarding. I'm not sure what I enjoy more, building the business or actually building the product, but either way, it's building and it's fun. I love it.
Nice. What's it like working with your brother? It's never really worked for us.
I was going to say, we've often thought about branching off and doing 2 separate podcasts.
No, it was really good. So I come from a family of 6. So I have 3 brothers. And we've all in different ways worked together over the years. But at the end of the day, I think if you view yourself as someone who's not perfect and makes mistakes, you can have a lot of grace for the people that work around you. And I'm the younger brother. So my brothers were pretty hard on me. Nothing came easy. I didn't get any handouts. I had to work for everything. And I think it actually really helped me, because it helped me to respect those that I was working for. But at the same time, you got to work hard. You got to fight for what you want. And you respect each other. And to this day, every Wednesday morning, we get together as brothers and brothers-in-laws, and we have breakfast down at Ricky's in Murrayville. And we've been doing that for probably 25 years now.
Nice.
Regularly go for lunch with them as well. So, some people need, sort of CEO groups and different forms to kind of help them bounce ideas and things like that off of each other. And I've been blessed with, you know, having a bunch of brothers that I can do the same thing with. So whenever there's a problem or something I'm trying to deal with, you know, I can call one of them and get some advice. It's actually pretty cool. It's maybe a bit of a superpower that we have. It's pretty sweet.
No kidding. Yeah. And in thinking about, like, just because I'm thinking about your start before the financial crisis, you know, you've kind of ridden different waves in this market. What's your sense of the market right now? Like, how are you feeling, like, in the context of your career? How are you feeling about the market in this day?
So I was with a really well-heeled developer. The partners between the two of them, you know, probably have probably close to 80 years of experience, been at it a long time. And I asked them that question yesterday, and their answer was really simple. They're like, be careful. Right? So, you know, there's opportunities in this market for sure for young guys like myself. If things would have kept going the way they were going, there was just no way we were ever going to get into the market from a development perspective, because land prices just kept going up and up and up, and the barrier to entry was huge. So in a lot of ways, this correction that we're going through right now is really good. It's really good for guys trying to get in to the market. You know, we have to be careful what we wish for. You know, if this goes on too long, you know, there could be some real problems. I maintain sort of I don't ever want to get into a position from a debt perspective where I could get in trouble. So I want to, you know, we talk about being careful. I think it's really important that we really assess our debt threshold and what we can afford. And, you know, if this goes on for another year, okay. If it goes on for 2 years, okay. I mean, you know, when I was talking to these developers yesterday, they're like, well, you know, look what happened in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
We had a decade of basically no growth. You know, we're talking about, you know, 2010 to 2020, like very marginal growth. So I think that there's going to be opportunities. I don't think the market's going to, you know, completely collapse. I think the pendulum has swung quite far to, we'll say, to the left, and it's coming back. Some encouraging things that, you know, that are happening. Could take a little while for them to kick in, though. So I'm optimistic, but again, I would just, you know, heed the advice I was giving yesterday. Be careful. I don't know. What do you guys think about it? You're talking to all sorts of different people. Like, what's your perspective?
I think that's bang on. I think, we were just talking about, I think that was a Richard Whitstock, Matt, on, is that a
Domus Holmes, Richard Whitstock was saying the same thing, basically, like the 90s. It feels very similar to, I can't remember exactly what year he had it pegged to, but it feels like more and more people are talking about that period as mirroring this one. And that's not great news.
Yeah. But I my sense is, like, always, and I mean, I think you kind of pointed to it, Justin, but it's this idea that there's opportunities in every market. And then also that every market's going to function different in this current state, right? So you think about, like, I always think about the Valley as being this area for, I mean, we're going to see continued growth, obviously, and the SkyTrain and everything else, and people moving that direction for affordability. And I feel like, you know, there's green shoots. I think it feels like at the beginning of this year for the market a bit. And I feel like there's more movement than last year, but it's kind of a TBD. I feel like we've been in this kind of holding period for a while.
Yeah. If you look at what happened over the last 5 years, there's a lot of people that were not all that capable that made some bets that they should never have made and did really well because the market bailed them out. And I think we're now in a time where, you know, the professionalism and skill and foresight and, you know, all the things that help us as business owners, it matters now, right? You can't just go out, you know, pay 20% more than the land's worth, you know, on speculation and get away with it anymore. And to me, like, as someone who, maybe I'm too cautious at times, but as someone who, you know, values due diligence and wants to make sure we don't make any mistakes, it's been pretty frustrating for the last, you know, 5 years, because nothing makes any sense. And you're like, how are they affording to pay for that? Like, I can't do that. Right. So I think, like, the pretend developers, the speculators, the flippers, you know, they've left the building. They're no longer able to operate. And it's, it's an opportunity for organizations that are professionally run, those that are, you know, efficient and good at what they do, to really to make a difference and to get back at it. Just be careful though. Like, you know, do your due diligence. Like, don't skip steps. Right? So
totally.
I mean, the idea, and I guess this has kind of come up in roundabout ways, but you put it clearer than I think anyone else has on the show. You know, not only, as Adam said, are there opportunities in any market, like the opportunity for you guys to actually develop your own projects came out of the slowdown by the sounds of things. Like, that there's actually, you know, if things kept going the way they were going, you wouldn't be in the position you're in today. So it's actually kind of a blessing, I'd imagine, for outfits like yours.
So, I mean, what we do, I mean, we do a little bit of development, but our primary business is construction, right? And so one of the things that we're able to do right now better than we've been able to do for years is provide value in areas that traditionally haven't been that important, because again, the market was bailing you out, right? So if a performer had to, you know, you had to get a 15% return on cost, you know, if you bought the land well, a lot of guys were making, you know, well over 15%. So it didn't really matter if they designed their building poorly. It didn't really matter if their unit efficiency wasn't that great. They were making so much money that it covered up all of these sins. Right. So today, like as a general contractor working with developers, we're taking the expertise that we've gained and learned and applying it to their projects. And we're looking at, you know, how do we increase your building? How do we increase your building efficiency? How do we, you know, make these units a little bit smaller so that, you know, we can reduce the square footage and still get the same value? How do we, you know, change the you know, when we look at a project, the first thing we do is we look at the parquet and we're like, well, let's make sure that we are using every last bit of this parquet efficiently and shrink it as much as possible if we can. You know, do we need this many parking stalls? Do we need this many lockers? Do we need bike lockers and additional storage? Can we combine those? You know, do we need two elevators in this building? Can we put one elevator in here and just make it a faster elevator? So looking at those types of things, and then additionally, like the fits and finishes, like, you know, there's been a lot of nice to haves that maybe we don't need, like this whole concept of needs versus wants and tightening the belt as developers, right? Like, we want to provide value to our customers, to the purchasers, but there's certain things that, you know, just don't actually bring value and cost you a lot of money. And so we've been able to, on the pre-construction side of things, you know, I can say with confidence, at a minimum, we are cutting out 10% of the cost of construction just by going through the drawings with a fine-tooth comb. I mean, we've had projects where we're saving the developer 15, 20%. We've had projects where we look at the DP drawings and we're like, we can't build that. We know that you will not make money at it. And there's no point in us even going down the building permit drawings. We've taken the drawings back to the development permit stage and completely redesigned them for these guys so that they can build them.
Oh, and that's your primary, what you guys are doing basically at this point. You're working with other developers from that nuts and bolts stage of looking at the drawings right to when the keys are handed over, basically.
Yeah. So I mean, we're it's a small margin business. So, you know, the efficiencies that we create in the design might get you a couple few points. The efficiencies that we can get you by building really quickly, you know, that's going to get you a couple points, right? Like for us, we don't make any money if the projects that our developers bring to us can't actually be built, right? So that's the first thing we're doing is we're doing a feasibility analysis. And often, you know, we're doing the performa on the project without the developer even knowing it, just to see if we think it's a viable project. Because there's a lot of guys that don't actually know. I mean, the number of people that come to us and they ask us for advice on their performance, and we look at them, we're like, well, you're missing these fees, you're missing those fees, your revenue is too high and your construction costs are too low. Like, we need to look at this right now and figure out if there's any point in going down the road and spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars on design and permitting, right? So, yeah.
So Justin, just thinking about your history, you know, of actually being on the tools as a framer to a project manager to an entrepreneur, like, is what you're doing today, is what your company doing today, do you draw on all that expertise?
or how do you see your past as shaping where your company is now?
Yeah, great question. You know, I think about all of the experiences that I've had growing up working in construction, and they've all shaped who I am today. And, you know, I go back to, you know, when I was, you know, 10, 12 years old, and, you know, my mom would drop me off at the job site and I'd be sweeping and cleaning up and doing all those different things that, you know, all the way through, you know, university and those first years of working as a project manager. Every time I've gone through a stage, it's given me an appreciation for the work that's being done at that stage, right? So, you know, when I ask someone to go do a drywall cleanup and, you know, I know they're going to be at it all day, you know, having done that myself, it's one of the worst jobs you can do. I hated doing it. And so if I can ask someone to do it, you know, a young 16, 17 year old kid, I'm going to find a way to make sure that that person has some breaks during the day. You know, that person wants to get into construction. You know, they're starting at the bottom of the ladder. I'm going to say, well, we're going to do this drywall cleanup. And then, you know, after coffee break, I'm going to, you know, work with you and we're going to do a little, you know, lay out a wall or lay out a set of stairs. Or I'm going to walk you through, you know, how to, you know, case a door or hang a door or something like that. And, you know, I'm going to spend 10, 15 minutes with them. You know, maybe I'm going to show them how to use a skill saw, right? I mean, we all love kids. We all love tools, right? Nothing better than taking a skill saw and, you know, learning how to cut a straight line, right? So, you know, if I'm asking someone to do something that I haven't done before or something that I have done before, I have a way better perspective on how to lead that person. And so now with the stage that I'm at, you know, I'm working with, you know, project managers and superintendents, and I'm able to feel their pain because I know what they're going through. So when I say, well, you know, why isn't it done? And they give me, you know, a number of reasons, I can, you know, identify whether or not the reasons are right. Valid or not. or, you know, if they are valid, I can say, well, hey, like, I understand. Like, have you thought of this? Have you tried that? Have you worked with this? You know, I think in construction, like having a passion for construction is going to make you way better at it, right? I mean, you talk to, I've heard a number of different developers on your podcast, and they're talking about the passion that they have for design. Like, if you love design, you're going to design something really nice. You're going to fret over the details. You're going to spend, you know, hours at night when you should be hanging out with your family or doing whatever, thinking about, you know, how do I make that better? How do I, you know, communicate this in a different way? Right. And so, like, being passionate at what you do is going to make you better at it. And I think for me, you know, like Jim Collins talks about this hedgehog concept, right? Like he's got a little Venn diagram where he talks about, you know, what are you uniquely good at? You know, what are you passionate about and how can you monetize that? And if, you know, when those three circles come together, in the middle is what you want to spend your time and you want to focus on. And I think for me, you know, that side of construction, and, you know, I'm good at it and I'm passionate about it and I found a way to monetize it. And that for me has been a real success for me, you know, just leaning into that. Like we've all had opportunities to go down different career paths. And, you know, I think sometimes we chase a path that will, you know, pay us well, that, you know, has lots of shiny things down the road. It's when we find the path that, you know, aligns with our passions and what we're good at, that will be successful. And so for me then, like, construction's where it's at. Like, I love it. Like, I just came from the job site there and, you know, kicking the dirt. And it's like, I should be stressing over hanging out with you guys, but I'm like, you know, I'd way rather be out there with the boys. Yeah. I do like you guys too. Yeah.
You know, one thing that strikes me about that, Justin, is I was just on a call and somehow talking about the McDonald's franchise is like, you know, every owner's cooked fries or whatever, you know, they have that, like, you go through and you've done every job on the site basically. So you can put yourself in whoever's doing that job's shoes, but your passion lies in construction, but like, you've scaled a company pretty quickly in the last 15 years. Can you talk about, you know, the passion for building and how you've kind of taken that passion and actually built a company?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah. Thanks for asking. Yeah. So, you know, we talk about my passion for construction. I'd say I'm equally passionate or more passionate about building people. We hired a coach years ago and we were working through, you know, what's your purpose, what's your vision, you know, values, all these different things. And when we first got started with it, I thought our purpose was building cool stuff, right? That's what we put on paper. It was kind of catchy. It was sort of fun. And we ran with that for about a year or so. And we realized when we came back together, we're like, well, our passion actually isn't necessarily building construction projects or buildings. It's building people. And I think this was something that the construction industry is, there's so much opportunity in it, right? I mean, we talk about 30% of the workforce retiring in the next 5 years. We talk about, you know, working with millennials and you know, the challenges that are associated with that. I think the opportunity that we have to build people, to build the next generation, it's really something where we can build a legacy around who we are as individuals and what we stand for. And, you know, for me, we went through a process just this past year, sort of defining our vision. And we read, there's a book from Simon Sinek called The Infinite Game. And we came up with something which we call our just cause. And our just cause is all around serving and building the next generation so they can affect generational change in their community. And so, like, these are things that have lived in myself and the guys that work here at Caliber for years. We didn't really know how to verbalize it. We didn't know how to, you know, put it on paper. And so, like, as we've gone through this process of figuring out, you know, what our purpose is, you know, what our vision is, we've been able to create a really clear path for what it is that we want to do. And the construction industry is just so ripe for disruption when it comes to, like, things like culture and this sort of, like, ethos around, like, affecting generational change. Like, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, and maybe not, maybe even 10 years ago, you know, the do what I said because I said so attitude still worked. But today, that doesn't work at all, right? Like, do what I said so because of these reasons. And this is how it's going to affect you and how it's going to affect everybody else, right? So we've had to reframe the way that we lead people. And in addition to that, like, coming up with some rules around how we operate, right? So we have core values of own it, crush it, and love it. You know, people make fun of me for it all the time. Like, you know, my buddies are like, yeah, go own it, right? Like, but at the same time, like, you know, you're doing a good job with your values when people start making fun of you for it, right? But it's given us clear ground rules for how we operate. And we've got such a tight knit set of values and we know where we're going. And in construction, we're all using the same consultants. We're all using the same trades, the same building code. Like, there's very little that's differentiating what we do, right? There's some creativity around design, but, you know, we're so limited because of the products that we use. So for me, like, the real differentiator has been culture, right? So, you know, having this culture of building people and affecting generational change and owning it, crushing it, and loving it has been super powerful.
No, that's great. So it sounds like culture has been a huge thing in building up the company. What have been some of the challenges over the last decade or so? The biggest challenges in your business?
Well, the biggest challenge has also been the biggest opportunity for us. The biggest challenge, you know, you talk to people out there and it's like, I can't find good people. I need people to do the work, but, you know, retention's bad. People are, you know, every 2 years, these young guys are moving on because they, you know, want new opportunities. You know, so for us, having this differentiator of culture has allowed us to scale up an organization by giving people a place to work at that they believe in. Doesn't mean it's not a challenge for us, right? We spend an incredible amount of time and effort on retention, on culture, on team building exercises. I mean, we just 5 years ago, we implemented open book management. So from a, you know, from the labor to our project managers to our, you know, VP of construction, they all know how this business makes money. They know how their efforts affect the bottom line. And so much so that we've tied everyone's individual bonuses to corporate profitability and their individual and corporate efforts. So getting everybody aligned, while it can be a huge challenge, and it has been a challenge at times, has you know, out of necessity forced us to create a culture where people essentially, you know, do own it. Like they want to be part of it. They feel like their opinions matter, their efforts matter. And we've had tremendous success through it.
Sorry, can you just break that down? You actually, when you say open book, everybody in the organization is kind of looking at the...
Yeah, the financial statement. So, I mean, there's a certain level of detail that makes sense to go into, but like from income, you know, cost of goods to overhead to what we call profit before tax, everybody knows. You know, like our profitability is no secret. Everybody knows how well we've done or how poorly we've done. And in a large part, we use something which is called high involvement planning, which continues to evolve. But we get our leadership team, you know, our project managers, our superintendents involved in figuring out like how profitable are we going to be for the year? And it's all around like, what can we do? What can we produce? And or what do we want to do this year for benefits? What do we want to do for team building exercises? Do we want to hire more people? Do we need another estimator? I don't know. Maybe we do. Maybe we don't. Maybe we can just move some things around. And, you know, so those are the types of decisions that are being made, not just by myself, but by the leadership within this organization.
And presumably that, like, I would just think that the buy-in is probably, you know, a lot stronger from your employees if they're literally able to be a part of those of watching the bottom line and having bonuses tied to performance basically of the company.
So a really simple example, we use these big large 40-yard garbage bins, right? And we pay a flat rate per bin, and then we pay in addition to that per ton. So if a bin's not full, it's costing us money. If it's full, you know, it still costs us money, but it costs us less money per ton because of the flat rate that we pay. So our machine operators know this. And when our garbage company comes to pick up the bin, like our guys are super conscious of how much waste is in that bin. Like they are trying to load those bins as heavy as they possibly can. Right. So like that's just a really simple example of how powerful this program is, because they know, you know, if they get rid of too many bins without them being full, it's going to affect the profitability on that project and it ultimately affect their bonus. So,
yeah,
you know, we're instilling a mindset of ownership within every level of the organization.
And like when you advise developers on where they can cut costs, like you're trimming all the fat in your company by having all eyes on the budget.
If you're a developer, you know, you're hiring a builder to do your project, who do you want to hire? Do you want to hire the company that, you know, where the garbage guy is or the machine operator, his main concern is just getting the bins, you know, offsite and,
right,
you know, not caring too much about the bottom line? Or do you want to hire the company where everybody on that site knows the value of a 2x4 or knows the value of a day of schedule or, you know, any number of these things, right? Like, and in addition, like we play all these mini games, right? So we're teaching, like our staff know what a day of interest for the developer costs. So every day we go over schedule, they know what that's going to cost the developer, right? So it's powerful. Like, and we've had crazy success with it. Like we have 8 projects, large projects on the go right now, and every one of them is ahead of schedule. And I would say we're below budget within the contingency allowed on all of the projects. Like we've had some people come over from other companies and they see this and they're like, this is unheard of. Like we've never seen anything like this. And it's because we've engaged the crowd. Like we have everybody. You know, you pay for people's hands, you get their brains for free, right? Like that's the mindset that we use. So like, well, why not utilize that brain?
Yeah. And also like, I don't know if I have this saying right, but how you do anything is how you do everything, right? Like it's like from how you pack the garbage in the bin to it works its way up. It's like an example of how everything is done in the company with thoughtfulness, essentially. And
yeah. You know, sort of our core promises to our developers. You know, I'm sure you guys have heard of the three-legged stool, right? There's, you know, there's cost, schedule, and quality, right? pick two. You know, that's sort of the saying that goes right. And so for us, you know, I'll tell developers right up front, like from a fee perspective, like we're not the cheapest guys out there. Like you can find people that are cheaper from a fee perspective, but you will not find anybody who will build faster than we do for with the quality that we do. And with our focus on those two things, the budget just ends up, it just works out because like if you focus on speed and quality, you're not going back and fixing things. You're not, you know, spending months and months of extra time on, you know, having your site open. Right. So, you know, from that perspective, it's worked out really well, like focusing on those two things. And then, you know, in addition to that, like we have this, we say we, you know, precision and speed, that's our brand promise. Those are what we promise to the developers. In addition to that, like we operate on principles of excellence and safety, right?
Makes a lot of sense. Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible. This podcast is sponsored by Fenway by Caliber, bringing 209 new homes and 24,000 square feet of retail space to Willoughby Town Center.
And this retail component isn't just adding to the area, Adam. It's enhancing an already thriving community hub where neighbors connect over boutique shopping, great food, and everyday essentials. This is one of the final new construction opportunities to own in the heart of Langley's Willoughby Town Center.
And speaking of Langley, is it me or is Langley all you hear about these days? It's become such a powerhouse with over 7,000 businesses, the population set to double by 2040, and that SkyTrain extension arriving in 2029.
What's incredible about this location is that you're getting the best of everything. Your steps from the Langley Events Center, currently undergoing a massive $149 million expansion. The new Tennis Center and future Willoughby Community Center are right across the street. Plus, you've got the new Smith Athletic Park just down the road.
The location really is unbeatable, with 8 schools within walking distance and just minutes from Highway 1. And what I love is that this is a Caliber project. They're Langley locals with decades of experience who really understand this community. They've partnered with Polyco Group to bring decades of development expertise to Fenway.
With Langley's population set to double and transit connectivity expanding, this is your chance to be part of BC's fastest growing community. Register at fenwayliving.com. That's FENWAY living.com.
Fenway, where small town heart meets urban sophistication.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
It does. And I'm just wondering, like from a, I guess maybe I'll leave it open-ended, but how do you think this, the last couple of years, has it kind of allowed you to regroup? Because it sounds like a lot of this verbalizing some of the core ideas of the company have come about fairly recently. I guess I'm wondering, like, how has Caliber's strategy and potentially operation changed in the last couple of years with this down or slower market? If at all, I guess.
Yeah, no, great question. I remember 4 years ago or so, I was doing some site visits and I was going from one large site to the next. And I think I did 4 sites that day. And I remember just standing in the middle of this huge excavation and looking around and I'm like, this isn't going to happen again for a long time, right? Like with the market conditions, the way that they were, you know, the, you know, sales volume that occurred, like, just everything went crazy, right? I mean, we all remember what happened. It was a pretty special time. You know, so things have obviously changed today. People's belts have tightened. Projects are harder and harder to make work. So in the last, I'd say 18 months, we've pivoted significantly to working with BC Housing, with First Nations groups, with groups that don't use the same financial metrics that merchant developer would. And so we've pivoted pretty hard and we've been able to use our development expertise. I'd say right now we're one of the leading developer contractors working with BC Housing through the BC Builds program. So we're working with municipalities and church groups and other private institutions that are trying to take land assets that they have and utilize the grants that come from BC Builds. And so we've got two development projects. I mean, we're not the owner, but we're the development manager and the contractor for BC Builds. And yeah, because we do finance, because we do, you know, we manage our own projects from the development side, we're an ideal partner for that. I'd say working with First Nations groups as well, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there. You know, we have the expertise to help them develop that, develop on that. You see groups, the First Nations groups are becoming more and more sophisticated, and they are quite passionate about building out the lands that they have. And, you know, they just need people to come alongside them, respect them, and be able to help them out on that. And that's something I think too, like our, we talk about our core values of own it, crush it, and love it. You know, this love it value, I do believe is really felt by these groups that in the past maybe have been marginalized, that maybe haven't been as well respected as they would like to. You know, love it comes from a core value, a belief that I have, and loving your neighbor as yourself, right? How would I want to be treated in that situation? You know, how would I want my grandchildren or you know, those that have gone before me to be treated? And I think that's really resonated with these groups.
Fantastic. Maybe switching gears a little bit. I know, Justin, you're born and bred in Langley. I got that right. Born and bred in Langley?
Yeah.
Langley, sure. Langley, Ogres.
Run with that. Yeah.
You know, Langley's a market. I feel like we increasingly over the last couple of years on the podcast have talked about the Fraser Valley, but I don't know, like I was trying to think if we've ever really talked specifically about the Langley market. And I'm not sure we have.
Commercial podcast quite a bit, but yeah, on the residential show, not as much. Yeah.
Right. So I guess I'm just wondering, like, maybe as a, not necessarily how's the market, but maybe if you, looking since you started Caliber 15 years ago, like how has Langley transformed and what are you excited about? And then can you give us a walk street by street, which streets you like, where the opportunities are?
Where to go. Yeah. So obviously I grew up in Langley. I know the area well. You know, Warren Buffett will tell you, you know, don't invest in things that you don't understand or that you don't know, right? So for me, having been born here and have worked here all my life, like I understand the neighborhood, I understand, you know, sort of the economics and the desire to be in some neighborhoods over others. And so, you know, I might at times look at Langley with some rose-colored glasses and think that it's maybe better than some of the other areas in the Metro Vancouver area. It's better for me because of my knowledge of the area. So I won't go and say, you know, Langley's better than Surrey, is better than Maple Ridge or Coquitlam or Abbotsford or Vancouver for that matter. Interesting thing about Langley is if you're traveling through the Fraser Valley, you got to go through Langley to get to Vancouver, to get to Maple Ridge, to get to Richmond, to Wasson, you know, great access even down south to the United States. So I think in years past, you know, maybe 20 plus years ago, Langley was a place where, you know, people lived and I don't know that they always worked there. They probably commuted to Vancouver or these other areas. So I think it built itself that way as a bit of a commuter town. Now, as time has gone on, those that were involved in, you know, city planning and developing it have done a good job of centralizing a lot of the development activity in what we would call this Willoughby or Yorkson area, which is south of Highway 1. North of Highway 1, you got Walnut Grove and Port Kells and a couple of different spots there where there's a lot of activity as well. But in the past 10 to 20 years, a lot of activity has happened in this Yorkson area. And you know, we talk about the missing middle. We talk about affordability for families. You know, the number of townhomes and single-family homes that have popped up in Langley over the last 20 years is incredible. You look at it today versus what it was 20 years ago and you wouldn't recognize it. So it's been a great place for families to grow up. There's a lot of young people that live here that have grown up here. There's really good schools, lots of parks, good access to amenity. You know, traffic, you know, not really a big deal. It's becoming a problem. And I'd say, you know, within the last 5 years, there's been a strong push towards these larger you know, six-story multifamily buildings, a couple towers that have been built now. So the town is changing pretty dramatically, pretty fast here. You know, out of necessity, you know, affordability is an issue here just as it is everywhere else. But, you know, I'd say the last 15 years, 20 years, great place to grow up. And so you've got that sort of basis of young people that, you know, want to continue to live in Langley. And that's where you're seeing a lot of the growth. Yeah, I mean, we've got great access to all these different neighborhoods too, right? So, you know, people enjoy being here. From a development perspective, like, where is the activity? You know, it's primarily south of Highway 1 between, I'd say, 200th Street and 208th Street, basically all the way down to Langley City, coming down to, you know, 56th. So there's a pretty large area. And I think you're going to see another genesis over the next 10, 15 years here in Langley with the SkyTrain coming into Willowbrook, coming into the city there. The BRT, the rapid bus, is on its way as well. There's lots of news articles coming out from TransLink, you know, connecting Langley City with Maple Ridge. So I think you're going to continue to see a lot of activity along 200th Street. Right now, the fundamentals don't work for towers. They don't work for towers anywhere, but they specifically don't work in Langley right now. And so there are some challenges, like our local municipality right now is updating their community plan. There's a plan called the 2040 plan, which runs up 200th Street. And they've identified three locations specifically where they're pushing tower density. So that's going to pose some problems in the near future here, because towers don't work and they might not work for another 10 years, might not work for another 20 years. I don't know. But at the same time, forethought has been put into what this place could look like. The planning for towers has taken place. So the density will continue to build around 200th Street all the way up from Langley City to Highway 1. It's just, I think it's going to take a little bit of time for the economics to catch up to the plan, the growth plan. So yeah, that answer your question?
It does. You know what? I'm just wondering, like, from so Langley City's where the SkyTrain terminus yeah. is. There's another stop for it heads into Surrey, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's Willoughby Town Center.
Yeah.
And a couple other areas. If you've ever listened to the show, you've probably heard at least me ask this question. You have a niece looking to buy a property either for herself or as a rental, but she's thinking primarily about investment.
Yeah.
What is the spot in Langley right now where you're like, this is the no-brainer spot?
Well, I mean, we've talked about, or you guys have talked about this. I've heard you talk about, you know, now is the time to buy a pre-sale, right? Like, you know, interest rates aren't great right now, but we know they're coming down. Costs are about as low as they can go. I mean, we've run some performers right now where land value is basically, you know, zero. Like, it can't go down any more than it is. Like, people will just have to stop. So now's the time to buy. And I look at areas like you mentioned, Willoughby Town Center. Like, there's a tremendous amount of amenity coming to that area. You know, a couple minutes from the Langley Events Center, there's a massive soccer pavilion being built a couple minutes away. There's a community center with a pool that's being planned and is, you know, in design. I look at the shops. I look at the schools. You know, if you wanted to buy somewhere like Willoughby Town Center, 208th and 80th is where you want to be. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense. What about product type, Justin? Are you thinking like townhomes, or do you think the condo market in, like, how are one beds and two beds being perceived in Langley?
Well, I think most people that live in Langley want to live in a single family home. That dream for most people is it's not there anymore. So then, you know, the next option is a townhome. Townhome market in Langley isn't great right now, but what market is great right now? But there is a lot of product here, and like, if you could get into a townhome here, I mean, townhomes are the new single family homes that we grew up in, right? So I think the townhome market is very strong here. That missing middle that we talked about, you know, dual income earning parents, two kids, three kids, whatever, you could quite You have a very nice lifestyle here, right? Like the kids can walk to school, tons of programs. You've got a lot of the amenities that you would have, you know, living in a more dense neighborhood with the shops and the walkability, the bike paths, all of that exists here. And so you ask about the 1 and 2 bedroom condos, you know, those have been attractive for investors. So the investor market has been very strong here. A lot of people are buying these units, holding on to them and renting them out, right? Classic investment strategy. So I'd say that there's actually, you know, Langley, there's a lot of affluence here. There's a lot of people that have owned their homes for years that have the ability to pull equity out of it and buy, you know, condos, hold on to them and rent them out as future investment assets. So I'd say the market here is still quite strong for that. How many people are buying homes here, buying condos and living in them for, you know, the rest of their lives? I wouldn't say it's quite as strong as, you know, a Vancouver area is. Like the lifestyle here is still, I want a home, I want a backyard. Where am I going to put my hot tub? You know, I got two dogs, like where are they going to run around, right? So people still want that. It's very family oriented. It's very traditional in a lot of ways. So, yeah.
That missing middle product will be popular, sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There's lots of it.
I'm just curious about Langley City, where the SkyTrain's going in. Is there, you know, forgive my ignorance, presumably is there quite a bit of development right in around there right now, or is it just beginning? I know you're saying towers don't make sense at this point, but can you paint a picture for people who don't get out there that often?
Yeah. So Langley City's pretty, like it's, you know, it's got Fraser Highway that runs through the middle of it, which, you know, there's a ton of towns like that throughout the Fraser Valley here where, you know, these little towns sort of popped up around main intersections. And, you know, with the SkyTrain coming to Langley City, it'll make it a very attractive place. But a lot of the buildings that are there are, you know, 50 plus years old. So you're seeing developers that are coming in now that are, you know, buying these older buildings with the plan of redeveloping them as time goes on. We've seen a pretty decent push, you know, in the last 5 to 10 years. A lot of six-story wood frame product has been, you know, built there, you know, tearing the old stuff down, putting the new stuff up. And the nice part about the way Langley City is operated, like Langley City, it's small compared to most municipalities. They're really easy to work with. They got a really good crew over there. And so it takes a lot of the risk, the development risk, out of the developments itself. Like you can meet with their director of planning. You know, I could email them today and get a meeting for Friday and we could have a really constructive conversation about something. You know, I could go through their rezoning and development process, you know, within 6 months and have a building permit within another 6 months, right? As long as my consultants are good, I can move really quickly there. And so that's been a huge advantage for them. Like you guys have talked on the podcast too, right? You want to go to neighborhoods where they actually want you there, right? Like there's so many neighborhoods, right? Do you even want us to develop here? Like, yeah. This is so challenging. The challenge that Langley City is going to have, and I don't know who planned out the SkyTrain route, but probably should have talked to some of the builders because building in the city line is going to be, building high is going to be really difficult because of the soil conditions. You see that in like the Cloverdale area as well. Like essentially these are all floodplains where we have a ton of what we call blue clay underneath them. So, you know, trying to build a parkade where you're shoring, you know, 2, 3, 4, even more levels down, it's going to be very difficult. I actually don't even know how they're going to do it. Finding, you know, bearing capacity for these large buildings, it's going to be very difficult to do. Additionally, we have an airport, like a small little airport just around the corner from Langley City. So there's issues with height variances as well. And you can't build tall buildings too close to airports. So, you know, all of those things are going to make, you know, densification difficult in the city of Langley. That being said, it's a great place to live. Like it's surrounded by ALR land. You know, again, there's lots of amenity close by. So I think, you know, there's lots of good things coming for Langley City, but I don't think you're going to see the type of density there that you would see in some of these other neighborhoods.
And so do you see, because I'm just thinking about, I mean, all the projects you guys did, the Hive, Aldergrove Town Center, Walnut Park, a lot of the stuff seems to be wood frame, 5, 6 story kind of range. Do you see more of that type of development happening?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, in development is so full of risk, right? We're trying to de-risk ourselves all the way along. And I look at the amount of equity, the amount of cash required to build some of these larger buildings. You know, you need some pretty decent revenue in order to justify building these things. And so here in Langley, you know, you buy a 1 acre piece of land, you know, you put up a building, like it's doable. Like, it's hard. Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, I have a lot of respect for the guys that do it and take that risk every day, but it's something that can be done. You know, you could still sleep at night while doing it. Right. Yeah.
What about Fenway? And can we talk a little bit about Fenway, like where it's located and just give people kind of a sense of the project? You give a rough overview of it?
Yeah. So, you know, you asked me the question, if I had a niece who had, you know, was looking to buy a pre-sale, you know, where would you go? You know, we took the same approach when we were looking at Fenway, and we're like, where do we want to go? And so we're 208th and 80th. We've got 206 units of six-story wood frame, got around 25,000 square feet of commercial with it as well. It's right next door to the Willoughby Town Center. Like, it's in the Willoughby Town Center. So there's a ton of walking amenity. It's right across the road from the new Civic Center pool that the Township of Langley is building. It's also right beside Willoughby Elementary School. So it's surrounded by a really good amenity, you know, access to Highway 1. You're, you know, 3 minutes from Highway 1. So there's great access to amenity, but also to transportation. Yeah. And it, like, this is like, Langley hasn't seen a town center like this before, right? I mean, you look at some of these larger, well-built out neighborhoods in Vancouver, and, you know, you guys had Nick on the other day, and he was talking about the efforts that City of Surrey has put into their Surrey Center, right? Like, Willoughby Town Center is as close to Surrey Center, you know, it's just it, like from a composition perspective, like they're similar in that there is a town center, there's walkable amenity, and there's everything that you need there. It doesn't have SkyTrain running through it, so it, you know, it's not quite the same in that way. But I think, like, as our homes get smaller, we want to have more to do outside of our homes, right? We want to be able to go to the pub, we want to be able to go to the park, walk the dog, you know, go to the pool, you know, do all those different things. I mean, there's a tennis center right across the road. I mean, I don't know how many tennis centers there are nowadays. Not very many.
No kidding.
There's everything you need there.
Goes back to your the most expensive square, the most important square footage is outside your home. Who said? Dustin Woodhouse said that, didn't he? It was like 10 years ago he said that on the show.
It was me, but we'll give it to Dustin.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So, well, that's just thinking about the breakdown of the unit sizes. So is it a mix of like one beds, two beds, three beds?
Yeah. I mean, it's very typical in that way. You know, we've designed the product so that we can have, you know, the investor friendly units, the one beds and the two beds. We have quite a number of larger units. I don't know that we would have designed it that way with today's economic climate in mind, because it took us 5 years to get this thing through development permit approvals and all the challenges that we had along the way. We designed the units, you know, when we were in COVID, and it was like, well, people need two bedrooms, they need a den, like we're you know, scared to go out of our homes, and we need that amenity. So the units, they're bigger than most new developments that are coming online. They're tailored, designed for end users to live there. We have covered balconies with the Lumon enclosures in them, right? Like most investors, that's not what they're looking for. We have a ton of it, right? So we're really catering to the end user, to those that want to live there, that want to have that feel of living in a vibrant neighborhood. And I think too, like, can we talk about design and we talk about what would we want if we lived in a home, right? Obviously the development fundamentals need to make sense in order to go ahead with the development. But I think we designed it with looking at it, like, what if we wanted to live there ourselves, right? We've got a lot of young people working at Caliber, and, you know, we ran it by them. Like, what do you guys want? What would you like in a home, right? So it's designed with the purpose of living and growing up in those homes.
Fantastic. Well, maybe we'll leave it there, Justin, but we do have this segment called the Five Wire, Five Lighthearted Questions to
debatable
the show.
If they're lighthearted anymore. Matt took a red pen to the Five Wire.
I spent all Christmas break going over the Five Wire, and I'm not sure it's better. In fact, it might be worse now, but we'll give it a shot. Do you have time to stick around for that?
I do.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform.
Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the presale world on fire without a spark.
Okay, so question number one, what's a restaurant in Metro Vancouver that you think more people should know about?
So 202 and 86 here in, we call it the Carvolf in Carvolf, which is in Willoughby. There's a new restaurant called Brodeur's. So I'll shout out Brodeur's. It's a sort of a Louisiana French Quarter kind of Montreal smoked meat restaurant. And they've done just a really excellent job of designing it. The design has a ton of character. The food has a ton of flavor. And it's really well set up and it's run well. I mean, there's lots of good restaurants, you know, chain restaurants that you can kind of always count on. But this is unique. It's good. It's really good.
Well, that's a great one. Wow. Yeah. That's an interesting idea for
Bistro. Yeah. Get the French Quarter rolls.
This actually just outside of the Five Wire, the commercial component to Fenway, what do you anticipate or what do you think is the type of retail that might go into those spaces? Like what are they designed for?
The people that are buying commercial spaces right now, they seem to be dentists.
Physiotherapists,
hair and nail salons. Pizza joints. I think it's because of the financing that these guys are able to get when they're purchasing their units, like these commercial units. But like they seem to have an unfair advantage of sorts. I don't really know. Like, are they up front? Do they actually do dentistry, or are they like, I don't know what it is. I want to get my dentist license so that I can just buy real estate and get really good financing on it.
You know what I think it is? Is I feel it's so funny. But Corey on a commercial podcast, he talked about how dentists have almost like come out from underground. Like they used to be like the second floor, no branding, whatever, right? And now it's, you know, a few people went and took the retail level with big brands and now they're really busy. So it's like everybody's kind of moving into that space. So are we just seeing like all the dentists looking for a ground floor commercial? Tough to say, but.
But I think they're obviously the AAA for financing, that's for sure.
Well, they can afford to pay more than everybody else. So I don't know. They got to figure it out.
So anticipate a dentist, maybe.
I think so. Yeah.
A well-heeled dentist. Okay. All right. Question number two, a book that everyone should read.
Yeah. So you guys have probably heard this. I thought about this a bunch. I'm going to give you two books, right? So last year when we went away with our leadership team, we read The Infinite Game. We came up with our Just Cause, which really helped us kind of frame, you know, where we wanted to go as an organization. This year, as a book study, when we went away with our leadership team, we read The 10X is Easier Than 2X. I'm sure you guys have heard of it. But it was like pouring gasoline on a vision that we already had. And when we were talking about what we could do as an organization, I was thinking, you know, if someone else was listening to us right now, they'd think that we were crazy. Because it's like, we honestly believe we could do anything we put our minds to. And it's because we have this just cause in mind. Like our vision is far more noble than just, you know, want to pad the pocketbook and have a nice retirement. And then adding like this 10X is easier than 2X is pretty powerful.
That's
those two that's together fantastic. Is a so good,
one,
really good
1-2 punch.
It is. Look out.
Right on. Okay, here's one. What's a strong opinion you held 5 years ago that has completely changed today?
strong opinion that I held that has completely changed. So I used to, like from an organization's perspective, I used to really like, I still do, but having a small team, and I kind of wanted to sort of hoard the knowledge and the resources that I had and just keep it to a small team, build into a few people rather than a large number of people, because I felt like, you know, like less was more from a culture perspective. And I think as we've grown, we've realized that we actually have an obligation to society to take what we've learned and bring it to a larger group of people, right? There's a parable in the Bible that talks about talents, right? And this parable talks about, you know, one guy getting one talent, another guy getting three, and another guy getting five. You know, I maybe didn't understand how many talents I had. I was maybe a little bit clueless to it, but, you know, I've realized that, you know, maybe I got more talents than I originally thought. And for me, it's really become important to take what I've got and to use it to build lots of people, not just myself. I can't hoard it to myself. I can't just use it to create, you know, this little construction company here in Langley. You know, we're gonna grow. We're gonna take what we've learned, and we're gonna affect generational change in our broader community. And it's gonna go well beyond serving me. It's gonna serve a lot of different people, and I'm excited about that. I think with the way that our society has shifted things, we've become very individualistic. We're less about community than we have been in the past. We're far more concerned about, you know, our own welfare and you know, our own retirement and you know, our little families. I think we gotta start thinking about the larger community again. We gotta start thinking about like what's our legacy gonna be, right? And maybe it's not about us, but it's about the towns that we live in. Like what's Langley gonna look like in 10, 15 years, 20 years, and how can I affect change there? I'm gonna affect change in Metro Vancouver. Like I've been thinking a lot about that, and my worldview is getting larger and larger on that. It's pretty exciting.
That's a great one.
Yeah, no kidding. And these new questions are really panning out.
Has nothing to do with the questions, man. I hear it. What are you listening to these days, music-wise?
Music-wise, so I have 5 kids, and they're all getting into different types of music. Maybe it's because I'm living here in the Valley, but listening to a lot of country music. I find country it's much easier to listen to when you got the kids in the car. You know, they do talk a lot about, you know, drinking and, you know, there's a lot of whiskey and this, that, and the other thing going on. But it's some of the stuff that's out on the radio right now. I'm like, man, like this is extremely inappropriate. like if you're actually listening to the words.
Yeah.
So trying to find a genre that I can listen to with my kids that they actually enjoy. So I'm taking my 14-year-old daughter to her first concert, and it's going to be a Nate Smith concert, country music. I don't know who Nate Smith is. I know nothing about the guy, but I'm getting into it. I'm trying to learn. It's going to be good.
Fantastic. All right. And last, but not least, Justin, I feel like after this a fairly inspired last couple of answers, this question feels out of place, but it's the only one we got. If you had to start your career over in a completely different industry, what would you choose?
That's an easy one for me. I would be a farmer for sure. I love land. You know, those farmers got all the land. You know, we as developers, we got a bit of it, but you know, we buy 1 acre for you know, $5 to $10 million. These guys buy, you know, 1 acre for $50,000 to $100,000. They drive cool tractors, like they're doing all sorts of cool stuff. Like, look at the barns that these guys got. Like, it's freaking cool, man. Like, I don't know, they get to wear cowboy boots. So they get to, I don't know, farming sounds pretty cool.
I'm in. Hey, yeah, I think because this is an old question, but I think we should just throw it in if you have a minute. Because you're right, Matt. There's been a lot of inspirational answers out of this episode. What is one habit or belief that you've recently adopted, maybe that has had a positive impact on your life?
This is a really good question. I'm glad you asked. You know, not that the other questions weren't good, but this is one that I think you know, if I could convince all the people that I talk to that are interested in personal growth, I think that like meditation, and so for me, meditation, you know, I get up early, I spend a half an hour, you know, reading a devotional, and then I write out my prayers. So I'll spend like 15, 20 minutes just like, you know, talking to God, writing out whatever it is that's on my mind, on my heart, and being open to whatever it is that he wants from me. And like, that's been super powerful for me. Like, cause it takes away the anxiety that we have about trying to do it all on our own, right? Like, I feel like I've got a partner who's, you know, looking out for me, looking out for my best interests, and, you know, steering me in the right direction. And also having like a source of truth, right? Like, you ask somebody like, what do you believe in? Like, what's your truth? And like, you get some really weird answers these days. Like, I don't even know where these people are coming up with this stuff, but like grounding yourself in biblical truth, like it's really cool. And it gives me a lot of confidence to know that what I'm doing is right. Yeah. Meditation and prayer and grounding yourself in truth. Like, it's really good.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's been a move towards, I know with journaling in the morning, like a lot of people for listing out what you're grateful for, but somebody said to me the other day, they were like, that's kind of prayer. Like it's very similar to prayer, right? So it's maybe not surprising to hear that that's having a profound impact on how you start your day. So.
Yeah. I'm in the middle of a book right now called Sacred Pace. You know, I'm halfway through it and I'm like, I just can't stop talking about it to different people because it's of its perspective on life and how work fits into that. Like when work becomes our number one priority, it consumes us in a way that is just not healthy for us. Like if we ground ourselves in, you know, who we believe we're called to be and like every action from the way that we treat our neighbor to the way we treat, you know, people at work or, you know, in every aspect of our life, like it's totally game changing. Like you just become congruent in all aspects of life and work just sort of fits into it as just one aspect of who you are as an individual.
Well, let's leave it there. That's
yeah,
huge.
No kidding.
Justin, how can people find out more about what you're up to? And of course, Fenway.
Yeah. So, I mean, easy one there, caliberprojects.com. That's easy. We're also on LinkedIn. You can look up Caliber Projects there as well. This is going to sound really bad. I actually don't know what our Fenway handle is.
We'll link to it.
Yeah.
You put it on there. I'm sure you go to the website, you'll find it. Fenwayliving.com or something like that. So
yeah.
You can tell I'm not in marketing. I'm a construction guy.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for taking the time.
Business. It's been a great talking to you and I really appreciate your time.
There you go, guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So there you have it, folks, our conversation with Justin Bonkis, CEO and founder over at Caliber Projects.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Justin. Super glad he joined us on the program. Matt, tons of takeaways. Love his approach to business, and I love his approach to how he's building his company. Like the full open kimono on finances and profits. And it's all brilliant. And you can see why hiring a company like Caliber to build for you would be such a good move, just because I feel like they do what they say they're going to do. And I would imagine there'll be a lot of cost savings and you get a great product delivered in the end as well.
Yeah. You know what? What struck me at the end of that conversation was, you know, sometimes people have bosses and it's like, yeah, I have a boss. I feel like Justin is a leader. That's pretty clear. And he's got a clear vision as to what the company means and where it's going. And I feel like by the end of that conversation, he was almost bouncing out of his seat. He was getting so worked up, you know, jazzed up about building his business. And it was inspiring to see for sure. So great having Justin on the show and hopefully everybody enjoyed, because yeah, I think you're right. There's about 100 things I took away from that conversation.
Yeah. And before we cut for the day, Matt, what do we got? We've got, of course, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
That's right. VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. That is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the Live Wire. This is our weekly mailer where we just sent out the January stats. Surprise, surprise. Lots of listings, some pickup in sales. but a lot of listings hit the market in January. You would have saw that if you were signed up to Livewire. You could also dig into neighborhoods and different price bands, see what's selling and what the sales ratios are. That's at the Livewire. We also have, of course, tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you're not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us. Set up your own free account. This is the best way to monitor real estate in the Lower Mainland. And I got to say, you're right. It's like sales volume has increased, but also listings are outpacing sales. And what a time to be monitoring listings. Tons of new inventory coming. We're on the verge of the spring market. Basically, we're early February. Next couple months, it's really go time for the spring market. So lots of new inventory coming. And this is the time, if you're thinking about buying or selling, to be making your move.
Absolutely. There's no better time like the present. If you want to talk about that or anything else, Adam, you can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week. And we're back here next week with another excellent episode. Can't wait.
Take care.
2000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.